in your own words, just describe to us what muscle dysmorphia is exactly.
Well, muscle dysmorphia is easily described as the opposite of anorexia. Whereas an anorexic will, you know, try and eat as little food as possible to get thin, maybe because some influence from the media or something like that. Someone who's got muscle dysmorphia will eat food constantly and, you know, obsessively to gain weight and to be as big as possible. And it's something that's, I think some people, if they think of muscle dysmorphia, they might get confused and think that perhaps it's someone trying to copy a Hollywood star of some kind, like I think anorexia is trying to copy models or something.
Yeah.
But it's not like that really with muscle dysmorphia, because it's to the extreme that you have to be. So it's, if it's something where it's not going to take over your whole day, then it's, you're not going to do it. Someone with muscle dysmorphia needs something that will take up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's like being as big as possible.
Right.
And that's bigger than everyone else, and so people see you and they're shocked at how big you've gotten and things like that. It's not just putting on a little bit of size.
And it is something that took over your whole day, as you say.
Yeah, it completely took over
your
whole day.
Or your life, maybe. Yeah,
my whole life as well. When you have muscle dysmorphia, everything revolves around getting bigger. So if anything that could be, you know, detrimental to that, you will cut out of your life, no matter how important it was to you before you had the condition. For example, I used to always play football in school, and even before that. But when I got muscle dysmorphia, I cut it out completely. And so, because I didn't want to burn any calories. And if I did go down, you know, sometimes because I really wanted to have one game maybe, if I did do that, I would have to bring, you know, a very high calorie foods with me to make up for any sort of weight that I think I could have lost from that.
Right. So muscle dysmorphia, like, basically, just to explain, like, to people who wouldn't totally understand, it's like bodybuilding. As such.
Yeah, it's bodybuilding, but some people can do bodybuilding and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take over their lives. But generally, I think that a lot of people who go to those extremes generally have some sort of psychological problem that makes them want to do that, because I think normal people generally don't find that particularly nice to look at, all the huge muscles like that. So I think there has to be a condition for you to want to get like that.
Okay, so what would you say the difference between, like, maybe a sort of standard bodybuilder and somebody who has muscle dysmorphia be?
Well, the problem with bodybuilding is that to get into that, you have to take steroids. And it's just a fact now, because now you have to be, in bodybuilding, the champions are now, you know, without any body fat hardly, and about only 5 for 10, they're about 24 stone. Without any body fat. So you can't get like that without taking steroids. You can be very big and very strong without taking steroids, but you can't be that big and that ripped without taking steroids.
Can you just pinpoint a time in your life when you realised that you might actually have muscle dysmorphia itself?
Well, I think I knew for a while that I had that I had something, but I really didn't concentrate on that, because a lot of people were telling me, you know, that were in my family and things like that, and my doctor were kind of telling me about that I might have some sort of reverse anorexia, as they called it. They didn't know the name. So I went on the internet, looked it up, and I found out about muscle dysmorphia and things like that, and I kind of thought, well, that's what I have. But that never made me think, oh, I have to get treatment for it, because I was doing what I felt that I should be doing, and what I felt, you know, I kind of felt that's who I was someone who was really big and strong and everything. So I felt that I had to keep on doing it. But if I had to pinpoint a time when I got it, when it probably started, it was when I left school. Actually, when I was in school, I was always kind of conscious about my size, because I come from a big family, so I was always kind of, you know, the smaller child. So that always bothered me. I was always said when I was in school that I can't wait till I'm 18, I can join a gym and things like that. So as soon as I went to university, I joined a gym then, and from there I suddenly found that I could I was starting to get respect from people who in school, you know, would have said, you're small or something.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they were asking me for advice and everything like that. And I think then you kind of get hooked on it. And it was also like a crutch, because I found that any time I felt insecure, because, you know, there's such big classes in university, and I felt kind of self-conscious, I could go to the gym and automatically I'd feel better. So I came to rely on the gym then. That's probably when it started.
So you felt more comfortable being in the gym?
Yeah, much more comfortable in the gym. When I was outside the gym, I always felt very small, especially with a large crowd and things like in town or in university. So it was always, I just couldn't wait to get to the gym to make myself feel better. So it's almost like a drug in that way.
Right.
Because once you're in the gym and you're lifting weights, you feel big then, and you feel you feel relaxed. You don't feel that everyone's looking at you or something like that. So yeah, I definitely came to rely on it.
Can you just give us a brief example or a description of how this actually took control of your life, what you would actually have to do exercise-wise and food-wise?
Exercise-wise, at first, because I was so desperate to do it, I started working out 6 days a week and having Sunday off, because that's what I read in the books that the bodybuilders do.
Mm.
But what I didn't realise at first, and what I think most people don't realise at first, is that the bodybuilders are taking steroids. That's how they can work like that without collapsing.
Yeah.
So I was doing 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, and I was so exhausted that, my muscles were so sore. And I found I wasn't gaining any size. And I did that for maybe 6 months. And I was so frustrated because I wasn't getting bigger. And the reason is because I was damaging my muscles by working out like that.
Right.
I gave them no time for recovery.
Okay.
So that was definitely made me very depressed at the time and unhappy and frustrated as well. And I think that's dangerous, because that's what gets people who have muscle dysmorphia onto taking steroids.
Okay.
Is that they feel that they can't grow, and then they just take steroids. So the thing is that you really, if you're going to do that, you should do what I did, which was to research what am I doing wrong. And then as soon as I found out, I automatically started growing very quickly. So, but in terms of how it affected my daily life, it would be, apart from the gym, outside the gym was when all the work was done, really, because I had to have 8 meals every day. That included 2 protein shakes. I spent all the money I had on supplements and things like that, but just like whey protein and vitamin tablets and all this kind of stuff. Also, you kind of cut off your friends, because going to town is something that will burn calories. You'd be walking around and stuff like that. So I began to, stop meeting up with them and stop ringing them. Also, you never want to leave the sofa.
You're basically completely consumed with what you're trying to do.
Basically. And even going up the stairs, you don't want to do it, because you don't want to waste any calories. So your whole day was just either being in the gym or thinking about the gym and eating all your food and drinking the water and just trying not to burn any calories. And also I had to get 8 hours sleep every night, obsessively with that as well.
Like at this time as well, I mean, did it ever occur to you that you were shutting out other parts of your life to pursue what you were actually doing?
Yeah, it did. My parents would always tell me, and my friends would still ring me up, and I would always have to think of another excuse. And my parents would always tell me that I should be going out more, obviously, because I was in the house all the time when I wasn't at the gym. So that was... So yeah, I didn't really miss it, though. That's the thing at the time. Now you think back on it, you think, well, how could I have done that? But at the time, you had the gym there, and that took the place of your friends and things like that, and you didn't feel like you needed your friends. And also, college suffered because of it, because I felt, when I first went into college, I didn't feel very... I didn't feel very, very secure there, but in the gym I did, so I kind of pretended it got to the point where I would say, I won't go to this lecture today, I'll go to the gym instead, but I'll go to it tomorrow.
Mm.
And then it ends up, you keep making excuses, then you end up going to none.
Right, yeah.
And then tell my parents I'm going to college, when really I'm going to the gym. So.
Right, so you're kind of lying about it and...
Anything you could do just to... Because if my parents thought I was only going to the gym and not college, then they wouldn't have supported me doing it, and helping me out with the gym fees and things like that. So I had to kind of lie about it.
Can you give us an example then of what a typical day would be for yourself at that time?
Well, a typical day wouldn't have been very eventful. If it was a gym day, I'd get up and straight away I'd have a protein shake, to stop, you know, the fasting when you're asleep. I mean, it even got to the point where I wake up in the middle of the night to have a meal as well. So I didn't have 8 hours without a meal. It was four, and then another four until breakfast. So then I'd get up and I would then have a normal breakfast. Then I would, you know, head into college to go to, then I'd go to the gym, and from the gym then I'd come home, and for the rest of the day I would just have my, what meal I'm going to have planned out and at what sort of time, and then that would be it. I would just sit and watch television for the rest of the day, trying not to burn any calories.
So there's no break from it, really?
No break. No. And that's, sometimes it got really tiring because you couldn't actually stop thinking about the gym. Everything was to do with the gym. It was like, if your parents say, you know, do you want to go to the beach or something, and you're like, well, will it affect my gym if I do this? And it just goes on like that, so until everything revolves around it. So it was very taxing sometimes to keep thinking about it like that.
How did you get to the stage that you needed to seek some sort of support or attention for it, the disorder itself?
Yeah, it was, a lot of the time my parents talked to me about it, because it got to the point where I first started out, and I was 12 stone when I first started lifting weights. And
what age would you have been then?
I was 18 when I started. And then I said, well, I want to get to 14 stone. And then I got to 14 stone pretty quickly after the original bad 6 months. And then I said from there, and at that time my parents still supported it, because they thought, you know, I wasn't really huge. I didn't have stretch marks everywhere. But then I said I wanted to get to 16 stone. And then I got to 16 stone. Then I said I wanted to get to 18 stone, and then I got to 18 stone, and then my parents got really worried, because then I said I wanted to get to 20 stone, and then they could see they just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. And at this point I had stretch marks, you know, all over my arms and my legs and things like that. So I got up to 19 stone until the health problems came along with my knees. I had Baker's cyst by my knees because of the weight pushing down them, and I had high blood pressure. That sort of stuff then made me realise as well. I mean,
had this been identified by a GP? Or
my parents forced me kind of to go to a GP to get a check-up, because I was out of breath going up the stairs even. I went along with it because it didn't... Everything that some people had said to me, my mum's friends and the GP and my friends and everyone, hasn't ever even come close to sinking in. I've still thought, I know, I'm still not big enough, not strong enough. And so I went along to see the GP, and when he told me that, at the time I didn't even think about it too much. But then I went to see a counsellor, and my parents told me to go and see a counsellor because they said that they, you know, I wouldn't get any money for supplements or anything if I didn't. So I thought, what harm can I do? It's not going to make any difference. So I went along, and at first it was just good to talk about it to someone who wasn't judging me. But after that, I felt as though it wasn't going anywhere. And then all of a sudden, things just come together.
Right.
And the counselling then was a huge help to me. Because when you think back at it now, it made a huge difference. And if it wasn't for the counselling, I wouldn't have been better.
You eventually did go to a counsellor, as you were saying then.
Yeah.
And how did you feel about actually going to a counsellor and seeking treatment?
Well, at first... At first I was fine about it, because I thought I'd get my parents off my back for a while. And I thought that, you know, anything so I can keep carrying on the gym without my parents every time I'm back from the gym, you know, talking to me. So, so I did that because of it. And it was good to talk to someone about it. But it's just strange the way it works. When you think that it's kind of not going to make a difference, all of a sudden it changes. It's very strange.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think that change was then?
It was a mixture of the health problems and thinking about, you know, this isn't good for me, and, you know, I can't. And it got to the stage where every time I jumped up in the air or something when playing, if I was going to play football and I jumped in the air for a shot, when I landed back down, my knees were just so sore, because there was the fluid had been pushed out of them, so there was no lubrication in my knee joints. That sort of thing really made me think about it.
Balancing it up.
And then the counselling as well. Suddenly, you think you've said everything you need to say to the counsellor, and you're wondering, you know, where are we going to go from here? And then all of a sudden, the counselling mixed with the health issues. All of a sudden, and then it just goes.
And he's up there.
Yeah, instantly gone. It's really strange now, because I still go to the gym, but I actually have to force myself to go to the gym now.
Right.
And it's so strange because before, you know, I couldn't not
go. You couldn't wait not to go.
Yeah, I couldn't wait. My whole day was like, I can't wait to go to the gym. And now my parents are telling me to go to the gym now. So it's just crazy.
Right.
It's changed so much. It's
a good turnaround.
Yeah. But at the same time, I don't want to waste those years of work in the gym. But so I want to, you know, I need to lose a bit of lose a bit of weight for my health, and then still keep my strength and everything up. I can allow myself to do other things now.
Right.
Because before, if I was trying to read a book for college, I found that I would read a book the first page or something, and then all of a sudden I'm thinking about the gym without even realizing it, and then I suddenly, like, in a daydream. And so at least now I can concentrate on reading and doing things, so I can go back to college and things like that,
without the same, I suppose, burden hanging over.
And it leaves, I mean, there was no room for anything else. At least now I can still go to the gym, but I can concentrate on other things as well.
Just going back to the college experience, like, when you were saying earlier that you would go into college and you would feel that you didn't fit in and that you felt better in the gym. Could you just explain a little bit more about how you actually did feel at that time?
Well, the reason why I didn't feel that I fitted in was because in primary school, my parents put me, you know, into a nice, you know, small school where I could... you know, where you get to know everyone knows you. Then I went to, and because I liked that so much, my parents picked out a school for me where it was like that as well. And then I suddenly went into college then, and then it was this classroom full of hundreds of people.
Right.
From when I'm used to like 15 people. And it was just so strange. And everyone there kind of, a lot of my friends didn't go to my college, or the people, they went away for a year out or something like that, the ones who did. And the problem was, it wasn't just that you didn't know anyone there, because I tried to, like, talk to people and whatever in the first few weeks, but everyone seemed to know each other from school.
Right, okay,
and on the first day of college, you saw groups instantly. Oh, I remember you from Black Rock or something like that. And everyone knows each other or something. So you found that everyone was already in their groups already.
Yeah,
so it was very difficult. So because of that, I didn't feel comfortable there. But I did feel comfortable in the gym, because it was something where... Well, another big reason for that whole thing actually would be to do with getting credit for your achievements and things like that.
Yeah.
I found that with the gym, that no one could take away what you'd achieved, because they can see that, you know, you're lifting the heaviest weights, or that you're the biggest or something. And
very obvious results as well.
And everyone's attitude towards me changed as well for the better. Everyone couldn't believe that I was doing that. So and everyone was like, everyone was talking about me then, saying, "Can you believe how big he's got?" And of course that made me feel great then. And so, so then I kind of came to associate college with feeling bad and feeling awkward, and I came to associate the gym with feeling great and everyone giving me respect and things like that. So that made a big difference to me.
So would you say that going to college was actually a triggering factor, or would you say there were other triggering factors? As you were saying at the start of the conversation, when you were growing up, you always felt small as such. You came from a big family.
Yeah, I'd say if I hadn't gone to college or anything like that, I think I still would have had it anyway.
Right.
Maybe something else would have triggered it then.
Okay.
But I think it was something that was waiting to happen, because the way I feel about it now, looking back, is that it was something that had to be gotten out of my system, and that I think it would have found a way to get out anyway. So, but yeah, I think it is definitely to do with feeling in control of things. Because when you've got muscle dysmorphia, you're in control of what you do.
Yeah.
No one else influences it. You don't rely on anyone else except yourself. If you don't feel up to going to the gym or anything like that, then it's not because of someone else to stop you going, it's yourself. So you can only let yourself down during this.
Yeah.
And that was really important for me at the time, because I was kind of sick of team sports, and then I felt that I did all the hard work and got the least amount of credit.
Yeah.
So I found that when I was in the gym, I found that I got all the credit, and the harder I worked, the more rewarding it was for me, not for the team.
Right.
So I got all the benefits of it. So yeah, I think it was definitely something that had been building up for a long time.
Can you describe to us what it's like as a male experiencing muscle dysmorphia?
I don't know what it's like for women who have anorexia, but for me, it's not something that I'm actually really embarrassed about.
Yeah.
It's something that I can tell people about and things like that. And it's strange though, because you don't get any sympathy. That's for a start, and I'm not looking for any either. But if you have a good family to support you, then it makes a big difference. But for someone who had that problem and didn't have the family to support them like I had, then I'd say it'd be very difficult to get over.
Yeah, I suppose the same with a lot of things, really. You know, if the support is there.
Yeah, you need the support. I mean, you don't think you need it until you've gotten through it, and then you look back and think, if it hadn't been for all the prompts I got from my parents, then I couldn't have gotten better.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I ever would have gone down the road taking steroids, because I could see how bad that is.
And
also, I was making a lot of gains very quickly anyway. But I can see that people who don't get the support and things like that, I think that that is a step that a lot of people with muscle dysmorphia could go down.
Well, for the benefit of people who don't really know a lot about muscle dysmorphia and mightn't think that it's a very serious thing, can you just list some of the extreme physical difficulties that can arise?
Well, I think that if I carried on the way I was going, I think that, you know, at my age, you know, to be over 19 stone at my height as well is not, it obviously wasn't healthy. And I genuinely think that if I carried on, I'd probably, and I was told this actually by a few people, that I probably would have died in my early 20s, because I was getting no exercise apart from the gym. I was eating 8 meals a day and then sitting on the couch. I was getting heavier and heavier and heavier, and who knows when I would have stopped. I could have just gone on and on and on. So so definitely that's a problem. And I think that what would actually trigger a heart attack or something would be in the gym, because I was carrying a lot of weight and I was lifting a lot of weights, and I found that sometimes, you know, when I had when I was doing my exercises, you just feel this huge amount of stress on your heart. And sometimes you just have to like take a break for about 3-4 minutes to get your breath back and things like that. And it's strange, because you could actually just feel the strain on it. And also in terms of your knees, if I hadn't started addressing my problem with my knees, I would have had to have them operated on.
How do you feel at this time then?
Feel kind of strange about it. I don't think that I ever would go back to it. I mean, some people say that if you get if you feel awkward again or something, might trigger it again. But for me, I think it was just something that was in my system and that I worked out of it, and that I don't think it would come back. I don't have, when I'm in the gym and I try and do the weights that I did before, when I started, I just kind of think, well, what's the point? I can feel the stress and strain. And before, it would be masked by adrenaline and things like that and just determination. But now I just think, well, this is just so stupid. I can do other stuff instead of this. I can keep my size, so I don't need to keep getting bigger and bigger. So I have to really motivate myself to get to the gym. So it's very difficult. And the other problem is, I think a lot of people can fall from one obsessive disorder to another. I think some people, maybe they suddenly go from, they're told they need to lose a bit of weight for their health, and all of a sudden they obsessively start going on the treadmill. That hasn't really been the case for me. I don't think I'm going to go fall into another obsessive thing. But at the same time, I think I've learned a lot of valuable lessons during that time. And I hope I stopped at a time where I haven't done any serious damage.